Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Welcome back to another episode of One of These Years, our Detroit Lions podcast. I'm Chris Burke, joined by Nick Baumgartner. You can get us on the Athletic app ad-free, as well as at Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, everywhere else you listen to podcasts. Make sure you head over to theathletic.com if you don't have a subscription yet. We got lots of Lions content and lots of draft content to come here in the next 6 months that might be starting pretty soon. NFL hit the halfway point this past weekend. Lions have 9 left on their schedule. Before we get into that, though, Nick, you get I know you're covering Michigan State, too, and they both played, but you get any time away from it this weekend?
I did, yeah, Sunday I didn't really watch any football. that was the first, I tried not to really, or I tried to stay away from most of it. For the most part, we had like 1.5 sick kids here in the house.
But there you
for
go.
The most part, for the most part, it was okay, and we had a nice break there. So, yeah, excited to sort of see where this goes, I guess, on the other side. I know Dan Campbell reset a lot of stuff yesterday, so we'll get into some of that here today.
Yeah, the Sundays when they don't play, it was like 65 degrees.
It was nice
sunny.
Out. Yeah. Like, I mean, people were all like, myself. I talked to somebody or talked to people yesterday, and it was like, yeah, anytime the Lions don't play on those Sundays, man, in the fall, it's very sunny, nice day, you know, no wind out there, everything else, but yeah, well, they're back, everyone, so
you didn't watch here. You didn't watch any of Matty Stafford's
I didn't
meltdown.
I tried not to watch any. I was colleged out. I was like footballed out by the end of Saturday, and yeah, I told myself Sunday, I was like, I'm just gonna leave it alone.
Yeah.
Like I watched so much football. I'll probably try to go back though and watch some of that, because I am interested to see sort of what happened there completely. I mean, I've read, obviously, and everything else. But, yeah, interesting result, to say the least.
Yeah, good result if you're
on that front. Good result for the Lions.
And an interesting draft pick spots.
And an interesting one as well. Yeah. Yes, and those conversations Chris and I will be having more of in the coming weeks, you can be assured of. Both on here and on the Athletic.
I tweeted, I mean, obviously Miami and Jacksonville, each one, that's two wins for them. So it's basically, I mean, I guess Detroit could rip off a couple at some point, but it's Detroit and Houston for the number one pick, like, right now. And Detroit's strength of schedule, so that the draft, just for people who don't know, the draft pick tiebreaker is strength of schedule, but it works sort of the inverse. So whoever has the weaker schedule gets the higher pick in the first round, and then if they were tied, they'd flip. So like if Houston got one, Detroit got two, then it would reverse in the second round. So Detroit would get 33, Houston would get 34. Right. But it's November 9th. I'm not going to get too deep into it. But
you are
anyway,
also,
it's Detroit and Houston.
You are also on the doorstep here of I believe, third Senior Bowl appearance by a Lions coaching staff in the last, 5 years?
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Yeah, I guess that's true.
There you go. Another layer to unpack as we go forward.
I wasn't planning on going to Mobile for a week, but
get your raincoat out, because I think you might be headed to Mobile and to hang out with our friend Jim Nagy there in January. I can't imagine that they're not going to be worse than two, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's what it
and you
like.
Would assume this coaching staff would take full advantage of
the Senior Bowl
opportunity.
I think it would be really good for them. Yeah. I think in that case.
If probably have a couple of the quarterbacks down there. Oh,
absolutely.
Man. Great.
It would be worth it. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, that's another conversation.
That's a real kick in the junk.
Yeah, we'll have to talk about that later.
not that Senior Bowl week's miserable, but...
right, yeah.
It wasn't the worst thing in the world to not go last year. Anyway, so we have all that to talk about over the coming months. Lions back at it in Pittsburgh this week. I just put up an article sort of looking ahead, starting the early look ahead to... next year. I asked Dan Campbell last week, you know, how do you balance competing every week versus just knowing that this is multi-year project? You know, you can't, and we've seen some of that. Darren Fells just got released because they wanted to play Brock Wright. Jamie Collins got released because it didn't fit on a number of levels with this new regime. And so I think that, you know, Campbell's answer was, well, we're trying to balance that. We also don't really have a choice at this point because we're playing, we have to play undrafted free agents and rookies and stuff all over the place anyway. So, I put up an article sort of looking ahead. We'll talk about that a little bit. I did want to get into some, you know, roster X's and O's stuff because there have been some developments this week. I mentioned Fells getting released. Brock Wright's been moved up to the active roster. Taylor Decker, they started the clock on him last week. Now Campbell said he's going to practice Wednesday, and it sounded like they want to make a decision for this week by Wednesday, you know, his first day back. If he looks good, they're going to let him play, and if he doesn't, they want to get Sewell at left tackle and Nelson at right tackle for the rest of the practices. Tim Boyle clock has started. What am I missing? Amon-Ra St. Brown said that you know, they're going to play him more outside at the Z. So a bunch of stuff here. I guess we can start with Decker, though, because I think in a lot of ways that's the most important one. Present, future identity of this team, like, that's a huge deal. So it's been a long time now that they've been without him. I guess, A, how do you think they fared without Decker and then also without Ragnow? But B, you know, we've talked about the Decker-Sewell dynamic, you know, left tackle, right tackle, all that a bunch. Now that it's sort of here, it's pretty clear they're going to go Decker left tackle, Sewell right tackle. So, you know, has your opinion changed there at all?
Well, no. No, my original opinion on this at the very beginning of the year, before any of this happened, when they drafted him, we'll say, was that Sewell is a more natural, if you're just talking Decker Sewell, a more natural right tackle, and he's a special athlete, as Campbell noted yesterday or Monday when we talked to him. He's a special athlete who can do some different things. He's a different type of player that we don't normally look at guys like this, that it's... that's part of the appeal. So I thought, you know, if you're going to keep Decker here and go forward with that, that's what you do. You put him on the right side and you let him go there. Now, when the thing happened before the season and he had to flip to left, when we talked early in the year, it's like there were some stretches early in the year where he looked like he wasn't going to miss anybody, like he was going to be just dominant over there or something like this. And it was like, hey, if we see that from him, no questions asked, maybe this is, you just leave him alone and it's a conversation that you at least have. But I think it's been up and down enough, and all the other points hold, that the original thing is still here, that Sewell is a really good athlete. And Campbell said that, you know, he's a pro, which is the other part of this. He's a really good athlete. He's going to do what's best for the team. Decker is a better suited left tackle. I don't think he'd be a good right tackle. I just don't. Maybe he would, but I don't think he would be. I think Sewell would be a better one. So I think I'm back to the original kind of where we were when they drafted him, or at least I was in my head, that, you know, you see what you have here with this situation, and then you make your decisions about whatever afterward. But all things considered, you know, I think the line's actually done okay, even without Frank. I mean, like, I think they've held up in certain spots. It hasn't been great, right? Like, and Sewell's been up and down, but he's kind of rounded out a little bit here, and Jonah Jackson's been very good, and Vitae's been steadier. So, like, I still think that they're doing some good stuff up front, and I do think that getting a guy like Decker back, maybe that helps with some confidence, and maybe that sparks something. I don't know. Maybe it helps in some areas, but you'll take it, right? I think that that's the best you can hope for.
Yeah, I mean, it's a little tough because you're coming off your worst.
It was horrible. It's been a
half now, but you're coming off your worst offensive line performance, so it sort of skews skews the picture a bit because, you know, Vitae, I think, have been playing really solid, and Jonah Jackson's been really good, and then you have this game where they kind of get crushed on the interior, and, you know, Matt Nelson looks like he shouldn't be on a roster, and it sort of throws everything out of whack. But overall, I think you're right, and I mentioned that article I wrote looking ahead to next season and sort of guys who will be back, and I, you know, Nelson's an exclusive rights free agent, so usually you sign those guys because it's 1 year, it's minimum contract, they can't say no, basically, and he's depth. Evan Brown, to me, has been interesting because I think it feels like they've kind of found something there.
They could, maybe.
You know, he's like 24, 25, he's bounced around a bunch, but they talk about how smart he is, he's played pretty well in Ragnow's absence, so if you're talking about pieces for next year, I think maybe he's one. But yeah, I mean, overall, I think the line has looked good, and you've talked a bunch about Sewell's development. Is the big key for him is we've seen him have some rough moments early, and as the game goes on, he gets better and better.
Yep.
This week's going to be, no matter which side he's on, this week's going to be another huge test because he's facing, you know, these Steelers guys, especially Watt, one of those guys who is not a great matchup for him. Those speed guys, those guys who have a ton of different moves in their repertoire. Like, if you get a physical guy up against him, he's been holding up pretty well. It's these are the guys who've been getting him trouble. So you worry a little bit about this matchup either way. But getting Decker back, I mean, I think that this sort of gives you more of an opportunity now to evaluate the discussion with him. What does this line look like, even without Ragnow, knowing Ragnow's not coming back this year? What does this line look like with four of the five in place if this is what we want it to be next year? And they have a decision to make. A decision to make on Vitae because he has a huge contract, but they have a decision to make on Ragnow because he is maybe the most appealing trade chip on their roster. Is that fair to say?
Decker,
not Ragnow. God, oh God,
you
no, not
Ragnow. Into the ditch.
Sorry. Oh my God.
I understand.
Not
what you're
breaking
saying,
any news there.
Yes,
Ragnow's here for 10 years.
Yeah, right.
Decker is, I think, the most appealing trade chip on this roster because he's proven he can play left tackle at, I think it's fair to say, at least like it's above average.
A good level. Yeah,
level.
Mm-hmm.
The contract is big, but not,
it's not insane,
through the roof. Right. It's something you could work with if you tried to trade him. He's still young enough that you could be picking him up for 6-7 years if you're trading for him. It's not like a plug and play 1 year thing. So this is going to be really interesting to sort of see where it goes. But we also haven't had, they will go through this whole year without having a single snap of
not one
Decker, Jackson, Ragnow, Vitae, Sewell. So, I mean, I guess sort of rephrasing what I've already asked, like, what does that do for the development here? Because we're never going to see what this was supposed to look like.
No, we never are. And that's the hardest thing. And it's just like, what do you do? And I think the thing that I really wanted to see when camp started with the offensive line was, you know, not apart from Sewell and everything else, but with Decker specifically was, you know, because he showed up in camp, and I thought he looked in great shape. I thought he was moving really well. He looked like he was coming off the ball. And I was like, are we going to see a physical sort of like edge to him in the run game that I think we've seen in past years when he was healthy, you know, when his back wasn't stiff or anything else? I thought he was much better. Obviously, he was much more steady in 2020 than we saw in 2019. But I did wonder when we saw him coming into camp this year, like, are we going to see a different, you know, piece to him in the run game, and is he going to be able to really unlock something here up front for him? And that was sort of my wonder, and I still wonder that. Are we going to see now, you know, a stabilizing force here on the edges with, you know, if you get Sewell back over on the right side, get a better left tackle in there, stabilize that, not so many of these misses that we've seen over the last couple weeks, if you get rid of those, but also if he's adding a piece to the run game, then it becomes the conversation becomes less about, are you trying to trade this guy? And it's more about, we just need to get everybody healthy, figure out what we want to do with the other guard opposite Jackson, and then you're ready to roll. That's what I would say the conversation should be right now. Is Decker going to give you something in the run game that sort of matches what you're getting from Ragnow, Sewell, and probably Jonah Jackson? If he's doing that, man, then I say you lock it up and you just roll forward with it. And because they're four really good players, and if they're going to come off the ball like that and maul people, this is what you build a team around. And, you know, I understand the trade piece. I do. And I think that's something that they have to absolutely look at. But like, I think they have to look at keeping him too, you know? Like, I think that's a conversation that is definitely probably on the table, but it's like, I'm curious to see how Decker plays here for sure.
Well, and the thing is, if you get rid of him, you got to replace him, right?
Exactly.
So even if you're moving Sewell to the left side.
And like you said, Taylor's contract is not horrible. It's not like,
I mean, it's big. Yeah. It's $19 million cap number next year, which is, I think that's the biggest thing. Like, right, the way this contract was structured after the extension, this year he's only counting $4.9 million because of how they did it. And next year he counts $18.9 million. So just naturally, I think the conversation changes because it's such a big jump.
Right.
But you have Sewell on a rookie contract. And even at, you know, $18, $19 million a year, you know, you're sort of bumping up to the top like five left tackle contracts, but you're assuming that market will keep going. So it's going to be a top 10, top 10 tackle contract, left tackle contract. So it's, again, it's big. It's a lot of money to deal with for a team that's going to have, again, some cap situations to look at this offseason, but it's not like he's getting $30 million next year. Yeah. You know, I mean, it's something
he's a top 10 left tackle.
Work with. Right. Yeah, right. You know, and, you know, to trade him doesn't really do you a whole lot financially. And so, you know, you'd be taking, like, if you're doing it in the spring, you'd still be paying like $14 million next year. So you'd be paying $14 million to move him,
right?
Not have him on your roster. You can't start Matt Nelson for an entire season at right tackle. So now you got to go find another tackle. And so, you know, I think you're right. Like, this was the whole idea. Like, when Campbell got hired, it was, we're going to stay competitive because we have this offensive line that can win games for us. And again, we haven't seen it. So it's going to be, if they keep it together, and I don't know that Vitae will stay. He's like a $10 or $11 million hit next year, too. But
and you can get out of that easier, too.
If you keep four of the five and plug in another veteran guard or whatever, maybe this is what you think it was going to be. It's just hard to say. That's really the most, for me, other than maybe that Goff has been, you know, as shaky as he has been, I think the most disappointing thing for me is that you don't know with this offensive line, because I think he probably would have won a couple games by now if you had the whole offensive line in place.
I think that's the best way to say it, because I think, and that's the, for me, it is the biggest disappointment, because I was not, I don't think I've been surprised by Jared Goff, to be quite honest. But like, I was excited to see what this line could do. I mean, I think people were just starting to realize how good Ragnow is. You know, I mean, I think, and we've seen it, right? I mean, everybody who watches the Lions as close as we do knows. But like, I think a lot more people were starting to see, you know, man, he's the best center in the league. You know, I mean, like, at least he's 1A or 1B if you want to start splitting hairs. So you've got a guy here who's like it truly elite. And then you've got this draft pick in Sewell who's, you know, this kind of unicorn athlete. We were curious to see what Jonah Jackson would turn into this year, and he has done, I think, what we thought he could do.
Yep.
And then you add Decker on the other side, and you're like, that could have been, with the way Vitae's played, that could have been, we could be talking about right now at week 9, one of the best offensive lines in the NFL right here on obviously a bad team. But like, that's what it would have been. It would have been, you know, you would have looked at the grades and been like, I mean, they have five of the best linemen in the league. I mean, that's what it would have looked like if they were all healthy, I think. But that's not what happened, and we don't know that for sure either. And I think that that's what we have to see from Decker now as we go forward and everything else. But yes, it's still the biggest disappointment for me, because I think it could have changed their season. I think it could have changed. It certainly, like you said, Chris, I think it would have been enough in some of those games to get you over the edge in some of the, you know what I mean? Like an inch or two or a yard or two when you're coming up short like that, that line I think would have been enough. And, you know, unfortunately for them, we're never going to see one snap of it. So,
And also, I think it's worth mentioning again, now we're halfway through the year, but I think it is worth mentioning, like, the timing of the Decker injury was right so detrimental, because it was like 3 days before the season started. And so all of a sudden you're scrambling. Right. You know, you can go back and talk about, well, Sewell should have been at left tackle the whole time. You should have moved Decker to right tackle in April. They didn't. They went with Sewell at right, Decker at left. I think it made sense to do that, to get Sewell. You know, Decker was good. Get Sewell some time. And then right before the season, you have to sort of just change everything about the way you're thinking about this team and about how you're going to be able to win games. And, you know, they can talk about next man up all they want, but we've seen what it does to put Matt Nelson in there and to lose Ragnow and all that. So, it is. It's got to be frustrating for them. They'll never come out and say it publicly that, like, oh, that really messed up our entire plans for the season. But it had to, right? Like, it had to really.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they were scrambling as much as they
absolutely
said they weren't. They were scrambling.
They have a very specific, and we talked about this all year, they have a very sort of like shrunken specific plan of how they have to play a game. Like, right? And it has to be carried by their run game. They have to be able to beat. We said this after they played, I think it was Green Bay. Like, they have to be able to, in the third and fourth quarter, especially the third quarter, late in the third quarter, they have to be able to have that in their reasonable arsenal on offense. Like, we have to be able to run the ball and you and have you respect it with the, you know, in the score, in terms of what the score is, you know, to be able to have any chance. And to lose those guys, that changes your entire, you know, everything you're trying to do changes, because the offensive line for this team was going to be, it was going to be everything. It was going to be the thing that set the tone for literally how they played. It wasn't going to be Goff. It wasn't going to be anything else, but how those guys were blocking with those matchups up front and what they were going to be able to do with the backs. And, you know, when that goes away, everything has to start over. And it's been, it's been a tall order for a lot of these guys, these coaches, especially Anthony Lynn, because you look at some of the guys they've lost on a team without as much, with no talent to begin with, really, in terms of depth, man, this is brutal. So yeah, that's what they've been up against. That's tough.
Like, how much of the picture for next season, we've got so much time to talk about this, I hate to even look ahead that far, but how much of the picture for next season, if you'd say, let's put Vitae in the maybe column, and let's say Decker's back, you've got four of those five, you've got Swift and Jamal Williams under contract, you've got Hockenson, St. Brown, I guess Goff to some extent, but like, how much... How comfortable are you about where you're at offensively heading into the next season, saying, all right, well, once we get Decker, Ragnow, Sewell, Jackson all together, this is going to be great. So we don't need to – we're in pretty good shape there. We can build from that. Like, can you go back and sort of reset and say, well, this was our plan of attack heading into 2021. Let's just move it forward to 2022 and try to do the same thing. Like, how much do you need to see it, I guess, before you can plan for be elite?
Yeah. And I think that that's, you're, unfortunately, I think you do have to see it. And I think that you're going to have to sort of piecemeal it. You know what I mean? Like, because that's why, you know, my gut would tell me that this isn't much of a conversation, that Taylor Decker is probably going to play well and it's going to make more sense for them to keep him at left tackle. And my gut is also telling me that Sewell is probably going to play well and be just fine. And, you know, you're going to go into next season knowing what you're getting from Ragnow, looking completely differently at Jonah Jackson, or, you know, I guess to Campbell's point a couple weeks ago when we talked to him about it, they've long thought Jonah Jackson would be exactly what he's turned into. And maybe that is part. Now, Goff is a different part of this conversation, but I think generally speaking, you would, if Decker comes out here and plays really well for the second half, then yeah, I think you run it back and say, like, quarterback's another conversation. But the way you want to run offense with the team that you have, you know, Swift being a playmaker, Hockenson being a, you know, hopefully a better blocker as he goes along and still a playmaker, you know, on the outside. And then maybe you can get a better receiver in here somewhere, you know, one way or the other. Like, then I think that that's what you do. Absolutely. I think that you saw spots early in the season, even with Goff struggling, where the Lions, they had some teams kind of on their heels a little bit with the way they were coming off the ball and running the ball and doing some different stuff. So I think that, and that was without Decker. So I think that that's reasonable, but like, a lot of it does, I think, depend on how Taylor plays for the next, this is a big half year, I guess, for him, because like you said, it's been a half the season. We haven't seen him. We haven't seen anything from him yet, you know, and we did want to see how he responded to, you know, 2019 was a rough year. 2020 was a good year. And then we wanted to see how he looked this year, and we haven't seen it yet.
Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things we talked about too, at some point, and get into the receivers here in a second, but we talked about at some point just having Vitae Sewell on one side and having Jackson Decker on the other side.
Yeah,
you really open up the playbook a lot more too, I think, because now you're not, like, if you go right now, Nelson's been fine as a run blocker. Vitae's, like I said, been pretty solid, but it's a different animal if teams have to worry about Sewell's athleticism getting out in front on the right side and Decker's athleticism getting out in front on the left side. You can go I just think there's a lot more available to you
right.
than there is yeah. right now. Or you're just sort of, you know, trying to just keep hammering that nail, doing things that you would anyway, but aren't working as well because you have Nelson in there instead of Sewell Absolutely. Decker. So I think that, you know, some of the complaints about the playbook too, and about the, you know, inability to get too deep into it or to take some mm-hmm. shots downfield and all this stuff. I think having Decker back maybe helps you open that up too, because teams can't just tee off on one side of the line anymore.
Right. I mean, it could balance things out, or just be the one thing, like you, like Campbell's talked about so many times, like you're just looking for another inch, right? Or another half right. second. And if he can provide that. But yeah, the greater point really to the run game is, yeah, if he's coming off the ball, and I mean, think back to August, you know, or, you know, early camp, late July. I thought he looked in great shape. I thought he looked like he was going to have a really good start to the year. And yeah, if he's coming off the ball and moving people and getting wide like that, and they can go outside zone on either side of the ball and get Goff on play action, that's what he was doing with McVay. Like, you know what I mean? So like, if you can start getting back to some of that stuff, they're not going to hate it. Lynn will try anything. So, I mean, more things become possible. Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing to say about, you know, Decker coming back for a team that's lost all these guys that have been, you know, like critical components to a roster that doesn't have much room for error. Like, getting somebody back like this has got to be at least stabilizing from a comfortability, confidence, whatever. Like, I got to think the room feels better having him in there, right? Like, stuff like that. I would think anyway. You know, I know he's been around. He sits down there on the bench with Sewell a lot and everything else, but like, just to have him back out there, Sewell said it the one time like a month ago, I just want him back in the huddle, you know? So
right.
I think that'll be good too, you know, for them to have him back out there.
So I mentioned the wide receivers, kind of an interesting revelation from Amon-Ra St. Brown this week. He said the coaches have been talking to him. Campbell's been saying, we got to give him the ball more. We got to get him more involved on a regular basis. And then, you know, St. Brown said, they've talked to me about playing some more Z and taking me out of the slot. And, which I wonder if the coaching staff was annoyed that he said that out loud to the media, but you look at him, and I tweeted out, you know, like, I think it was 30 of his 38 catches have come from the slot this year, and like 85% of his routes have been run from the slot. So we haven't seen him outside a ton. He did it at USC, and it was pretty interesting because of his versatility there. I don't know. How much do we read into this, I guess? Is this a product of them just not having anyone else to play Z?
Well, it's two things, I think. It's one, that they don't have anyone else. So it's like, this is a pretty good player. And so we think that he can, maybe if we can get him in some situations against some corners, or maybe he can work somebody, I don't know. But the second part of that, I think, is that we're going to see more him at the Z when they're in 21 or 22. So when they have the two tight ends out there, or when they have the two backs on the field, you're taking the slot out. So if, you know, St. Brown is at the Z and, you know, Khalif Raymond is the X, and they just go small or something, and they go small with the 21 personnel stuff and get those guys moving in motion. Okay, well, now you've got my attention. Like, those are things that's where my head kind of went when he said that. Like, I think we could see sort of him involved in more of those packages when they get the playmakers out there, you know. And right now the Lions playmakers are, you know, if you think about it, like, their best, when Jamal Williams is healthy, it's Swift, Williams, Hawkinson, St. Brown, and Raymond, probably, right? I mean, like, those are the guys. I mean, like, so you're finding ways to probably get your best or most reliable, I suppose, at this point, guys out there together, and whatever makes sense, and try to run offense the best way you can in that capacity. So that's what I think might happen. I think we could see more, and I think that could be good. You know, I think that could be good for the Lions. I don't know if they have a lot of faith in Brock Wright. I guess maybe they do if they're going to put more double tight stuff out there. But I think what it ultimately means is that when the slot comes off the field, he's not coming off the field. He's going to become a Z and a slot. He's just going to be both. I think that's probably what it means. I mean, I was curious for your thoughts on that too, because it could be both, and it could also just be because they're like, we don't know what else to do here. But I think it's probably more an indication that, you know, he's just not going to come off the field anymore.
Right. Well, my first thought, honestly, when he said that was, wait, who's the X again?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as I was like, talking.
Hodge,
there. I'm like,
I guess, Benson?
Raymond?
Like, yeah, and they've used Raymond. You know, Raymond has done.
He's been the Z. So,
the Z, you know, yeah. Like, so he's
Yeah.
And I guess that is an option. Like, if those are your top two receivers, you just leave your top two receivers out there. They're not taking, it's not like they're taking a lot of shots deep into right. traffic anyway, that you would need a 6'5 guy to go up and get it. So maybe that is
there. Yeah, right.
the best way to do it. St. Brown's played about 65% of the offensive snaps so far. So I think you're probably right. I think some of that is just, why are we taking him off the field to make sure right. Trinity Benson's getting exactly. outside? Like, there's no point.
He's not
to
giving
doing
us
it.
Anything. So, right,
and when they talk about, you know, when Campbell talks about, like, we're going to explore everything, I hope that you're right about it. I hope that this is, well, let's get
right,
exactly. St. Brown outside and motion him, and let's use him, like, hand him the ball a few times, and let's get Swift in the slot and put Raymond and St. Brown outside. And, like, all these things that we see every once in a while and they seem right. to work but haven't become staples of this offense, maybe that is what happens. And I do think, I mean, if you're just sort of ranking guys in terms of who's capable of having success outside, St. Brown probably would be your number one option on this roster anyway, from a skill set perspective. So, yeah, I mean, you may as well, right? Like you said, what do you have to lose? You're 0-8. Let's see if, and then, you know, you sort of look down the road. I don't know, like, Quintez Cephas doesn't seem like he's that close to coming back, but St. Brown and Cephas on the outside with Raymond in the slot or Swift in the slot or whatever.
Well,
maybe.
I think St. Brown is also, I mean, to marry the 2 points here, St. Brown's he's a pillar guy. I mean, he's going to be here. So I think that that's also something that you look at and you go into the second half of the season and you just say, well, like, no matter what this looks like in 2 years, St. Brown is going to be part of it. I think they would all tell us that today if they, you know, in an honest moment. Like, none of them have any plans. They've all been impressed by him since the minute he showed up. Like, they love the guy. So I think part of it too is probably, like, to the greater point of, like you just said, like, hey, the more he knows, the better, because we're going to, you know, if we think we can throw him in there with any number of different guys and the way that they kind of think that they can go about building this receiver room, if they found a guy that they like, they're going to keep him. And I think they think he's pretty versatile. So, and also to the other point, like, you know, he's probably one of their best blocking receivers. I mean, in terms of
the way
he competes, and the way he doesn't back down physically from anyone, that's why they like Raymond so much. So, I think that if you do it right and really kind of commit to it and commit to sort of that style of offense, which, I mean, that's what that's what he did in Buffalo. Of course, he had Tyrod Taylor, and I bet he wishes he had Tyrod Taylor right now. But, like, you know, I mean, that's a different conversation, I guess, with the quarterback. But, like, you can go in some of those directions. And I think that, you know, maybe for the Lions, maybe that's the best way to do it going forward. We'll see. We'll see how it goes. I don't know. I don't know what limitations you have a quarterback if you can't run, but, like, I mean, we'll see how they figure it out.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
I feel guilty admitting, but like watching the Bears play the Steelers on Sunday night, yeah. I definitely had a couple of those moments of like, well, Justin Fields.
I mean, man, I'm nice. Yeah, I mean, I just, it's another conversation, and it's like, and the more that we go into the year and the deeper we go, it's just, it's the thing that doesn't go away. I mean, I know that we don't like to make every show about Jared Goff or whatever, but it always comes back to that, because you're just like, you know, if he can't move, there's only so much you can do. But to the point we said earlier, like, if you can get your line moving both sides of the ball to where you're making defenses respect a lot with your run game, Goff's pretty good with the play action. So if you can get him back into some of those situations, then maybe you got something going.
Well, we do still need to talk, I guess, about Tim Boyle, because he's the other coming back here. And it, I guess the first thing that was interesting to me is that Campbell, because he's always honest, impressors, said...
You're damn right he is.
We came out of the preseason, or when we were getting to the end of the preseason, Boyle was a little bit ahead of David Blau in the quarterback race to be the number two, which I think runs against what most of us who were out there every day thought. Right. I think Blau, I thought, was better
in terms of how the performance
and
went,
I thought he was better in terms of how he was handling the offense. But we've also talked a little bit about Boyle and sort of how he plays.
Right.
And it's totally different than what Jared Goff does. And that's, I don't know that he's ever going to get in a, like ever going to play meaningful minutes this year, but that's the one thing that would be intriguing to me is just what does this offense look like with a quarterback who wants to take chances all the time, as opposed to never.
And like, exactly. And Boyle, the reason why they like him and the reason why he was ahead of Blau, despite not playing better than him, is because he has something with his arm and his athleticism that is a little different. He's not like the best athlete that you've ever seen, but he's not a stiff either. He can move a little bit. And he throws a really nice shot ball, right? Like a really nice, if you get somebody one-on-one in a slot and they beat somebody and he sees it, it's going to be a good, you know, it's going to be okay. But everything else is a bit of an adventure. So like, yeah, I don't know. I think that Boyle is definitely one of those guys that he's intrigued them from day one because of all of his physical talents. But I think the consistency thing and just like, can he do that is a question that we've never seen an answer to. And that's why I do think, and I will say it again, that if his hand is healthy at some point this year, before this year's over, we're going to see a Tim Boyle game. We're going to see, I think, a full game of him, because I almost think you kind of have to see it, right? Do you not? I mean, I kind of feel like, to your point that you just said it, like, what does this look like with a different guy in there? I think you owe it to yourself if you're really trying to evaluate this. This is not the Jared Goff rehab hour, okay? Like, this is the Lions rehab hour. So, like, you need to see everything that you've got. I still think we're going to see him in a game before this year's over. I could be wrong, but I think we're going to get our answer to that question one way or the other before the year's out. I mean, do you agree or no? I mean, I would ask you
mowing
again.
The lawn outside here, so apologies for the background noise. We talked a little bit about this last week because I said Goff, I think Goff is going to start all 17 if he stays healthy.
And I disagree.
I'd rather not see Goff start all 17 personally, and I think everyone's sort of in that boat at this point. I mean, I think they also, I mean, you're talking about evaluation. You just lost 2 months of seeing Boyle in practice.
Yeah.
Boyle and Blau are both free agents headed into next year.
You paid
Boyle,
too.
Do you want
too.
Either of those guys back? Right. I don't know. And you talk about Tyrod Taylor. Like, I don't, there's not really a way for them to move on from Jared Goff that isn't going to be a big hit for them financially. Yeah, like, that's what they were always kind of tied to him for 2 years. I cannot imagine someone's going to come trade for him.
No.
So your other option is just to like release him at some point and maybe try to figure out the money there. But you mentioned Tyrod Taylor and like Tim Boyle's sort of in that. Like, Taylor's started. I think he's shown he can win some games. He can be interesting. Yeah. But Boyle's in that range of guys where you're paying him like he's making $2 million and change this year. He's probably be in that $2 to $3 million range next year. Like that's the type of guy you're talking about. If it's not going to be Goff, it's someone like this
who
maybe is holding hands with
Malik
Willis or Kenny Pickett or whatever you're doing.
Whatever you're doing. Right.
So maybe you do need to see him. Maybe
I think you do.
Maybe he is an upgrade. I mean, I don't know that he's an upgrade.
They
in
like
terms
him.
Of like raw skills, but they do like him. And
he was the first guy they signed, I think, right? Or one of
yeah.
away. Yep. I mean, they signed him right away. And like, I remember when we talked to Anthony Lynn, when we did the film thing in the summer, spring, whatever it was, he was one of the first guys he brought up, like how excited he was, him and Jamal Williams. Like, those were the guys that they brought up, how excited they were that they got both of them. And I think that Lynn even said that he was surprised that they got him. Like, I was surprised we got him, but we did. And we were excited because they liked him a lot. So I think that we're going to see him. I don't know how it's going to shake out, but I think he's going to get a chance. I mean, hey, if he was healthy in the first however many games of the season, do you think we would have saw him? I think we would have. I think Campbell at one point would have been like, all right, go sit down. Let's get him in here. I don't think it would have ridden out. I mean, he had no choice. Yeah. I think that's part of, I think that's as big a reason to me. Maybe I'm wrong, but I look back on it now and I look, you know, what else would he have done? Where are you going? You're not putting Blau in there. That's not going to get anything done. He's not that guy. He's not going to, and they know that. And, you know, but Boyle, you don't know that. Maybe he could be. I think that's the difference.
Well, I think some of this, though, is that we're still trying to figure out, Nate, you know, 6 months into this and 8 games in now, just I still honestly could not tell you for sure where they're at with Jared Goff. Like I think they're frustrated. I'm positive they're frustrated. I'm sure
absolutely.
Anthony Lynn,
they're not
is
as frustrated
pulling
as
his
us,
hair
probably,
out.
Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Because you're just so limited right now. And in Campbell, this was another, you know, this press conference Monday, we're getting into that range now where he's saying stuff in the press conference that it sounds like he wants to get back to a player. And he keeps saying, we need to be more aggressive. We have to take these shots. Like, that's not play calling. I don't think that is Jared. Throw the ball. But I think the one thing that he said that was interesting too, and sort of goes back to the criticisms of Goff, is I forget the exact line. I should probably go look it up. It was something like, Jared will do what we tell him to do on a play.
Right.
So if we're telling him to throw deep, that's where the ball's going to go. But I think that also was like, I don't think he meant maybe to sound it to sound the way that it did, but it came across to me like, well, back to all the criticisms we've had of Goff, like, he's not going to, if your third read is a deep post, you're not getting there.
It's
that ball
happening.
Is not getting to the deep post.
Right.
So if they're going to dial some up, he needs to take some of those shots. And we've seen, I mean, there's been multiple times in games where I think Anthony Lynn has tried to dial up those shots and Goff has not done it. So I really don't know. I don't know on Boyle because I don't know that they would look at him and say, all right, well, maybe he's our starter next year. But to your point, they do really like him.
Yeah.
They clearly are not settled at quarterback.
No.
And he does have, I mean, he's at least has a skill set that intrigues you a little bit. He's going to probably make a ton of mistakes if he ever starts and turn the ball over a bunch, but he also might throw a 65-yard touchdown pass here and there.
Right.
And they're not getting that at all right now.
Exactly. And I think that's what you're talking. Goff's throwing 2 turnovers too. Like, I mean, like, it's not,
all right. That's
if that if that continues is really my point. It's up to Goff, of course, at the end of the day. Like, if he turns a corner and becomes the guy that they thought that he could be or something, you know, or something closer to that, then obviously this isn't a conversation that we're having. But, like, if Goff's play from the first half repeats itself and we get 2 or 3 weeks down the road and Boyle's hand is healthy and you're sitting there at a game, you know, at home and he is, you know, at 4 yards per attempt in the third quarter, I think they'll yank him and put Boyle in, and then it'll depend, right? Then it will depend. I don't think they're going to sit there all year with a healthy Boyle on the bench, and if Goff just continues to play like that and have those horrible stretches, no. I don't think they'll just sit there and ride it out with him and just not give Boyle any chance, because like we've said this whole time, like, you do owe it to yourself at some point to see what he's got. I think they want to. You know, like, you got to find the right spot to do it. But, like, I think the message to Goff will probably be, like, that's on the table now, big boy. Like, it wasn't in the first 8 games. But if you play, like, shit like that for, like, 3 straight weeks again, you're sitting. And I don't care how it hurts your feelings. Because, like, we got a lot of guys here who are doing a lot. And if you're going to keep turning the ball over in the fourth quarter. Now, if he doesn't, then it's different, you know, who cares? Then he's moving on, and then you like that too. But I think that that's probably what you tell Goff. I think Campbell can be more assertive with him. And I think that was the whole point of bringing him here, Boyle, I think, at the beginning, was like, get him in here, get another youngerish guy that he knows that we like behind him, so that there is a little bit of a fire there too. We're trying to rebuild his confidence, but he also needs to know that he needs to get going. And like, he didn't have any of that early in the season. And I think that hurt. You know, I think that hurt. You know, it was like, you could tell that Campbell wanted to reach somewhere and light a fire, and there was like nowhere to go. And I think now you can at least maybe do that. So we'll see where that goes.
Well, and to the point you made, you can't spend the entire year trying to rebuild his confidence, because as we've said with some of these other roster decisions,
you got to know,
just because you're on top of the depth chart, like, it eventually the team is going to sour on some of this stuff. If you know, and I think we've seen some of the frustration from guys like Hockenson and Swift, and they've tried to, they tried to take responsibility for it, to their credit, in the press conferences after games. And they have tried to talk it out with Goff on the sideline. And I'm sure they're having a lot of conversations that were not seen in the building during the week. But you can see it sort of bubbling over with some of these guys who aren't just here like trying to win jobs, who aren't Kadarrell Hodge and Trinity Benson, who are guys that are established NFL players and are probably going to be pieces of the future. And if you can't get to a point where you're comfortable with Swift and with Hockenson and with St. Brown and these guys are frustrated every week, eventually the coaching staff is going to reach a point where they just can't keep doing it. And
that's what I'm talking about. 100%.
Yeah.
100%. And Campbell will see that. Campbell and Anthony Lynn and Aaron Glenn, all these guys, they're all cut from the same. They know how to read that, I think.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think that that's where they're kind of uniquely positioned, you know, and the different, like, Campbell and Glenn are Parcells guys, right? In the sense that there is some of that throwback to them, and they want to challenge guys in the heat like that. But they also have, you know, they're more sensitive, I think, than Parcells ever was too. They can understand, I think, a lot of the stuff that gets put on the plate of a person. But at the same time, like, to be able to crank that up a little bit, I think, is a big sort of asset that they just didn't have. They haven't had with Goff. And yeah, I don't know. I'm very curious to see. That's maybe toward the top of my list, I guess, to see if whatever happens.
I know, because you it just want that Thanksgiving start, man.
It just hasn't been anything that was ever possible. It was like, people were like, bench. Look, you're not benching him for Blau. I mean, no offense to David Blau. I know they like David Blau, but like, it's just not, that's not a thing that you're going to do. You're not going to start David Blau for the next 8 weeks, right? Like, I don't, Boyle? Well, maybe that's a different conversation. It's interesting.
So I mentioned that I had an article up, just sort of an early look ahead to 2022, and between the guys who are currently on the active roster or on IR in some form, either permanently on IR for the rest of the year or, you know, designated to return like Decker and Boyle, trying to figure out how many of these guys are foundational pieces for next season, how many are probably going to be back. I told you, I think I ended up at like 33 or 34 between the definitely will be here, probably will be here category, and I really struggled to get to that point.
Right.
So you're already like, if they're in a similar boat, you're already talking about turning over like 20 roster spots.
Oh, yeah.
It might, I mean, I might have even shot too high. I don't know if there's as many locks here as I even gave. Like, is I put Jerry Jacobs and AJ Parker in the foundational pieces for 2022, but maybe I'm giving them too much credit. I don't know. Like, did you see, how many guys do you see that are like locked in as players on this roster for next year?
Like, it's super hard with guys like that, because I think that Jacobs and Parker are like the greatest examples of guys that are going to be really hard to knock off the roster if you're coming in here and it's like as a fringe guy, you know what I mean? Like, if you're coming in here to try to win a spot, I think it's going to be really hard for you next year to knock off guys like that, because those are two guys who came in here and did above and beyond in terms of what the staff wanted or expected and have continued to do so. Like, I mean, they're not Pro Bowlers or whatever, but like, they're competing every week. They've both made plays. They've both shown up. They've both competed the way Glenn wants his defensive backs to compete physically. So I think they're guys that, like, I agree with where I see where your head's at. You know, Raymond is the same way, like Khalif Raymond. It's hard to knock them off of that list because until we see somebody come in here and, like, outgrind them, I'm not going to put them behind, you know, somebody else who would come in and do that. But, like, that's where it gets difficult because they're not going to just, like, well, we got Jerry Jacobs, so we're not going to go look at another corner. Like, that's not how this is going to go. So, like, right. I think that has to be sort of part of the conversation, too. So it's double-sided in some ways. Like, the draft picks, Swift, you know, guys like that, obviously those are the guys that are back here. But, like, I can definitely see where some of those younger guys are going to be harder to sort of get rid of, you know. I think a guy like Austin Bryant is another one that's on that, like, fringe where it's like if he has a really good second half here, he's busted his butt and done everything they've asked him to do and, like, impressed them in so many ways. Like, if he is playing his best football at the end of the year, he's going to be really hard to knock off the roster. So I think that a lot of the guys that you have in that list, I understand totally what – even Nelson, you know, like, even Matt Nelson to a degree yeah. where it's like they know him. He's not perfect. They know him. And look, Nelson wasn't great for the first half of the season. I don't think he was a disaster. I think we both thought it could have been a lot worse, right? Based on training camp.
Oh, yeah, for sure, yeah.
So, like, I think that some of those conversations are where it gets hard because, like, it depends on sort of what they can find in the offseason, I think. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's as big of a part of this conversation as anything else.
Yeah, and I think you almost have to throw out this past offseason so we don't necessarily know how Brad Holmes is going to take this as this team sort of inches slowly closer to being competitive. You know, they're going to be a year where they're like, all right, we're right there. Let's go take some big swings in free agency. Or are they just going to keep, is it basically going to be the draft and trades that build the thing, you know? Because I think that this year they've gotten stuck where they've had to play a lot of these guys. But now, you look ahead to next year and like, if I think some of these decisions about like Decker's contract, Vitae's contract, if you're paying Jacobs and Parker to be starting cornerbacks and they're making undrafted rookie money, like that changes things for you. If you don't have to go pay $12 million to a cornerback. Right. And so I think that some of those decisions are probably important ones. I mean, Austin Bryant was a guy I mentioned as sort of, like on that fringe area.
Yeah, right there.
You're probably. I mean, Charles Harris has done well this year, but I mentioned in the article, like, ideally, you are giving his reps next year to Julian Okorah, to a healthy Romeo Okorah, to Austin Bryant, to
Kayvon Thibodeau.
Kayvon Thibodeau. Someone you're bringing
Let's
in.
Go.
Yeah. But, I mean, you don't want Charles Harris. Like, if you're saying, we can win six or seven games next year, Charles Harris, and again, no disrespect to Charles Harris, he's been really good for them this year. Charles Harris is probably not your starting edge guy in an ideal scenario. So I think that there are that is going to be a lot of these last 9 weeks. Like, are these guys just here because we don't have anyone else? Or is AJ Parker really the starting slot for us next year? Is Austin Bryant, Austin Bryant, Julian Okorah tandem?
Yeah.
Like, can we use that and get rid of move Trey Flowers? Like, does that work?
I think that you're finding like culture guys, you know, like that's what the conversation, like these guys that we're talking about right here, maybe not Harris as much yet, but maybe he becomes that, you know, like, I don't know. Jacobs and Parker especially are like, I mean, if Aaron Glenn is going to be here, those are guys that he's going to point to as they grow up and say, like, if you're going to play corner for me, you have to bring the wood like they do, or you're not going to be here. You have to hit as hard as Jacobs hits or you're out of here. Like, that's, I think, what he's looking for. I think that he's trying to find guys that, like, I don't care what their talent is. Like, look how hard he plays. Like, look how, you know, all these things, like, those are guys that I think are going to have a better chance of being here than they would on any other roster simply because of where the Lions are at, what they can give them from, like, a culture standpoint. And just, you know, if they trust him, they trust him. I think that that's what can be earned here probably in the next 2 months for some of these guys that, you know, if you're trying to buy an extended pass on the rebuild bus tour here, right? Like, I think that's what some of these guys are looking for. And yeah, Jacobs, Parker, Austin Bryant, I think those are the guys. And Harris would be right on the fringe, maybe on the other side for me. But those are three guys that I look at and say, like, they're culture guys. They could be, you know, they could be guys that help set a tone for you with rookies going down the road, with other young guys as they go forward, guys that other guys like in the locker room. Everybody likes Jerry Jacobs, right? This kind of thing. So, yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're looking for.
Do you think I put Anzalone and Khalif Raymond in as foundational guys for next year, and I put Jalen Reeves-Maybin in that second category because I think he might have more of an opportunity than he could have here. I know he's a core special teams guy. He's been playing a ton, but if as they ramp up Derek Barnes, that probably takes away from what Jalen Reeves-Maybin's doing.
Does.
But those are three guys that Campbell continues to spotlight all the time as sort of doing things the way they want to be done. Raymond never had much of a chance as a receiver till he got here. Anzalone, you know, was a good solid linebacker in New Orleans, but now he's like the center of this defense here. So is it unrealistic in any way to consider them as locks for next season? Like, do you see those guys or the Lions letting those guys leave, I guess?
I think that Anzalone would be, right? I mean, I think that he would be certainly one that I would be comfortable with because, you know, I think for the same reasons that Reeves-Maybin's role is going to decrease the better Barnes gets or the older he gets. It'll probably be that way for Anzalone too. It, you know, his role will also, I think in time, they want Derek Barnes to be what Anzalone is right now. And I think he knows that. I think everyone there knows that. They all know the score. But I think that for Reeves-Maybin, it would probably depend on what else do you do at linebacker? Like, are you going to invest high again in another, you know, kind of stack linebacker? And if you do that, one of those guys, one of those veterans is probably on their way out. Reeves-Maybin, however, I think is tougher to make that call on because like of all the things he does from a special team standpoint. And like, I mean, he's a linebacker who can run. That's what you need in 20. That's what you need now. I mean, I think that again, he's another one of those guys from a culture fit and he's older and they have like nobody here who's older. And he's not an old man, but I mean, he's been around and seen some things. You've been through the Matt Patricia era and make it out the other side smiling, and then you've seen some things and you can help, you know, you can help younger people. And I think that they definitely see him, all the young guys like him so much. I think they definitely see him as a guy that can carry more weight. You know, when Campbell talks about shouldering a load, you know, with Goff, like I think that's as big a part of it right now as anything else. Like guys like Reeves-Maybin and Anzalone, what they've done, I think in the locker room, Brockers, you know, it's a big deal, you know, like, and if you can get guys in here that can give that, then I think that you're going to overlook even some deficiencies because they're not trying to win. They're not trying to go 16-1. Right. So I think that's part of the conversation too.
All right. So I think we covered a little bit of this last week, but now we're officially into the second half. They've got the Steelers and Browns back to back, since the schedule continues to just hammer them here, and then the Bears at home on Thanksgiving. How do we know that this team is getting better over the next 9 weeks? Like, what are the markers for you between now and, you know, the second week of January, 2 months from now, that tell you that next season will be less miserable than this season, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's, number one, it would have to be like no more like massive steps backward like that. Like we saw in that Philadelphia game, like that stuff can't happen again. That was horrible. Like that was, if we see more games like that, then that's when people start to question things, right? Like that's when people start to say like, what's going on here? Like, are they onto something or are they just a complete mess? Like, right. Like, so no more of that to begin with. I think that would be number one on the list. And then the second part of that would be, for me, I think, are we going to talk higher about the guys that we've talked about today that we've seen a lot from in this first half? Like, are we going to end the season talking about Sewell? Like, man, we think he can maybe be a Pro Bowler next year. Are we going to end the season talking about Aleem McNeil and Onwuzurike as guys that are like, hey, we think they can be like a force next year? Julian Okwara, I think he's coming, he's finishing some of these plays now. You know, those are things I think that you have to look at. And it can't just be like, are they winning games necessarily, or are they in every game at the end or in the fourth quarter, whatever. It's about like, are they giving these teams more of a fight the whole way? Are some of those guys, and I think that the wins would probably take care of itself if all those things, you know, are positive answers for the Lions, but like, are you going to finish the year looking at Jonah Jackson in the same light as we're looking at him right now? Is he going to have the same second half as he had the first half? Okay. If he does, then I think if all those things sort of like add together, then I would say that they're progressing the way that you want them to progress. But if they're going backward and having these like really bad efforts, and we see some of these like, and we see heads start hanging, we see guys losing buy-in, like that's when we'll know, right? Like then this is going into a bad, bad place. So it's at a critical spot, I think, right now. You know, that was a bad game coming into this bye. It was bad, really bad. Did they talk about burying the tape? Is that what happened? I think
Aaron Glenn took the defense out there and like
dug a hole
and threw the tape. I hope on the hill. I hope it's buried under Patricia's hill in the back of the practice facility now. But they buried it.
If there was ever a time to bury it, a tape, it was that one, I think. So get rid of that. Don't ever want to see that again. Like, and I think that would be step one. Step two would be like we've talked about all those guys that you've seen positive things from, and there are a good handful here. Tracy Walker, you know, like let's see a finish now. If we see a full 16 games out of some of these guys, then we can put ink next to their name and say like gonna be here and a guy that you can count on. Like they're right there with a lot of them. Now let's see them sort of get over the hump with several of them, and that's at least a building block to go forward on. There's still going to be a lot of questions, like Goff and all this stuff, but in terms of little progress, I think you can still find some as you go forward here. I'm curious for your thoughts on the same question, though, because it's a difficult one for people, I think, to kind of wrap their head around.
I think I'm in the same spot as you. I mean, I think for me, it's looking at, you mentioned Walker, and they have to make a decision on him because his contract's running out, but Walker, Jackson, Hockenson, Swift, I guess St. Brown to some extent, Julian Okwara, Barnes, like some of these guys who have started to get better, especially guys like Hockenson and Swift who look like they could be, you know, all pro caliber guys. Yeah. But anyone that you look at and say, all right, when these guys are who need to be the foundation guys, like this is who they have to build around. And I think you can pick out Sewell too, obviously. Like there's like 10 or 12 of them that are in somewhere between like year one and year four of their career that are playing a ton right now.
And they're right there.
And have sort of rolled the roller coaster, but you can see what it will look like when it's really good. And it, you know, Hockenson and Swift, I think, are at a different spot in their development than someone like Sewell or something like that. But I think it's the same sort of conversation.
Exactly.
Like, are these guys next year, 2 years, 3 years from now, are these still going to be the core guys? And I think you can start finding that out right now, because if Hockenson now has 9 weeks where he doesn't do anything, that sort of changes your contract conversation with him. And if Walker is terrible for the next 2 months, I don't know that he's as much of a priority to bring back. So I think that that's where I sort of start. The rest of this, you know, Nick Williams and Trey Flowers and like some of these guys who are probably not going to be here for the long haul, like you'd like them to play well because the Lions need them to play well if they're going to hang in these games and win. But you really want to see what's going to happen with not just some of those guys that we talked about, like Parker and Jacobs, who have done well, but really like who is going to carry this team when it's competitive. And I think you have those guys on the roster right now.
You do. And you do. And I think you need to see some guys take some ownership too, you know, like I think more, you know, and I think this has been Dan Campbell's team to this point. Right. And maybe it'll be Dan Campbell's team
that's
all
an
year.
Interesting point. Yeah.
And maybe it just will be. I mean, maybe that's just one of those things and that's how this will be. But like at some point, DeAndre Swift, Hockenson, Sewell, Tracy Walker, they have to take the team over. And we have to know that this is their team. So whenever that happens, I don't know. Like you said, Chris, I mean, it's a different timeline for everyone. Goff, I guess, would be in that conversation too. Like if you're going to do this, if you're going to be the guy, has he done enough to convince everyone here, roster, player to player, locker to locker in the room that, you know, and I think those are the conversations that you're looking at, you know, like, some of these guys need to, this can't be Jerry Jacobs' team, you know what I mean, right? Like, just as much as it can't be Dan Campbell's. So, like, I think that that's another thing, too, to watch as we go forward here, you know, as some of these guys grow into leaders. And I know that a guy like Tracy Walker, that's a process that's been going on for him all year. You know, I'm curious to see sort of where that goes. And I, you know, I think that that's another thing to kind of monitor as the year goes on, because That's been a thing, I think, that we've seen. A couple different guys, I think, that could be an answer there where, you know, step up and take the team and say, like, hey, this is – I'm going to be part of this. I'm going to be, you know, a gatekeeper of this culture. I'm going to be somebody who fights for this, just like Dan does. Mm-hmm. And I think we've seen a few snippets of that from some guys, but – this is the time here, November, December, where it's going to get hard, where we're going to see more of it, I think. Or we're not going to see it. You know, it's going to be, like you said, we are or we aren't. And they're going to have different conversations as they go forward there.
All right. So in Pittsburgh this week, I'm guessing we'll hold off on a lot of the draft talk till after Thanksgiving. But it's coming.
It's coming.
We know they're picking pretty high. And it's going to be a huge draft for this regime. So we'll get into a lot of that as...
Check out those probably quarterbacks on Saturdays, yeah, folks.
Once we get through November and into bowl season and all that, we'll start hitting that a little harder. But for now, we'll continue to focus on this week-to-week with the Lions. Like I said, they're in Pittsburgh this week. Maybe a trap game for the Steelers? I don't know.
I don't know anymore.
Tough Monday nighter. A couple of tough ones coming up. Maybe they catch him napping a little bit.
Maybe Big Ben takes a nap, right? Yeah.
We'll be back next Tuesday to break it all down, preview the game against Cleveland the following Sunday. And again, as mentioned, you can get us ad-free on the Athletic app as well as at Spotify, Google Play, Apple, whatever you listen to podcasts. So for Nick, I'm Chris. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.